Hi, this is Tony Robbins. Welcome to another edition of Power Talk, the strategies for creating an extraordinary quality of life. Listen, I'm really glad you joined me because I want to share with you some simple distinctions in this session that I absolutely know can make that difference in the quality of your life, and you can apply today and see an immediate change in how you're experiencing your life. Because one of the things I'm committed to, and part of it is the nature of my life at this stage, I've been doing this for a quarter of a century. And if you've been around and listened to Personal Power, Get the Edge, or any of my other power talks, you know that basically I've been obsessed for 25 years with what makes the difference in people. But I've been equally obsessed when I figure out the answer with finding a way to communicate it in a way that's so simple that we can't help but get ourselves to actually apply it and follow through. And part of that is a necessity. I know it doesn't matter whether I'm in Australia or I just recently got back from South Africa. I was just actually outside of Zambia, going down the Zambian River, and people pull me aside at this stage, since I have 35 million of these tapes and CDs out there, and they want to tell me either how their life was changed or they want to ask me a question about how to change their life right now while I'm on the river, right now we're in the middle of something. And so I've had to figure out what are some tools that I can give people in a very brief moment or two that make so much sense, that are so common sense in their application, that you know beyond a shadow of doubt when you hear them that this will work, and so you're geared up to follow through. One of the challenges, of course, is that a lot of people say, that's all common sense. Well, have you ever noticed common sense is not too common? That the very things that would be so basic for us to follow through on, we don't usually follow through on. It's so often I talk to someone, and you'll say, well, you know, I kind of know all that stuff I should do to make my life work. And I say, what stuff? And they're not very specific. They're very general. And they say, well, I kind of know, you know, what to do, how to get myself to follow through. I say, well, if you know it, are you doing it? And my answer to people is life is really about mastery. If you're going to have an extraordinary quality of life, you have to master certain fundamental lessons. And they're not the lessons that you and I were taught in school. They're not the lessons that anybody pulled us aside and really gave us. There's no structure to these lessons. We were taught all kinds of things about how to be able to recite history. We're taught various aspects of mathematics, certain elements of science. But on a core basic level, there are probably a half dozen lessons in life that really matter. Like, how are you going to master your physical body? Because if you don't take care of that, nothing else matters. What are you going to do to make sure that in this lifetime you can truly achieve the visions you have and make them real and make it through all the challenges that occur, which really requires emotional mastery? What are you going to do to make sure your relationships are truly fulfilling? Because that's where all the juice is. What are you going to do to master your finances so that you have the freedom economically to do what you want, when you want, where you want, to give and create and share what you want in your lifetime with the kind of freedom that that can create and the kind of leverage that it can create for you? What are you going to do in this lifetime so that you really master your time? You know, what are you going to do to take your career to the next level? There aren't that many lessons to really master, but most of us major in minor things. Most of us don't focus on the things that can make the biggest difference, and then when we do focus on it, we make it as complex as we possibly can. And one of the reasons is complexity makes us feel important. Now, we all have that need to feel important. If you listen to Personal Power 2 or Personal Power Classic, I'm sure you listen to the section on the six human needs, the forces that basically drive all human behavior. And one of those six needs is the need to feel significant, to feel unique, to feel special, to feel like our life has some special meaning. There's something about our life that's truly important. Now, we have a need for this. It doesn't matter how we were brought up or who brought us up or what our religious beliefs are. These are hardwired needs that must be met within each of us, regardless of our upbringing, regardless of our education, regardless of our conditioning. So we have two options. Either really do something significant, like take a challenge, take a risk, figure something out, master an area of life, give something truly special to the world, or have a big enough problem that you got a reason why you aren't doing anything significant. It's something that is such a challenge that no one else can fully appreciate, but of course you, or those who understand your problems that you can share the story of your problems with. Now, I'm sure this is not the way that you live on a daily basis, nor is it the way I live, but we all have been guilty of this at some point, haven't we? See, think of it this way. In life, there are reasons and then there are results. There's the event that happens in life, and then there's the story of the event. You know, there's the flat tire and then the story of what the flat tire did to your day and how it messed things up and why you couldn't accomplish this and how it interfered with this. There's the actual event of someone saying something to you, and then there's the story you tell your friend about it. So much of our life is caught up in stories because human beings are storytellers. Throughout human history, We have told stories as a way to educate, to train, to engender values or virtues to one another. So what I want to talk to you about here is how to change the story of your life and thereby change your life. That's the essence that we're going to do. And how do we do that in a way that is truly masterful, not just dabbling in it, and in a way that we can count on that will absolutely work? Something you can test out literally today in your life in an area where you're really frustrated or overwhelmed or you're not following through, or you're not taking action. I'm going to give you a couple of tools that you can apply right away. Now, again, the reason that most people don't apply this stuff is because, gosh, if it's that easy, I don't have any excuses. I know you're not one of those people. You wouldn't be listening to this tape. But we have our moments, don't we? See, the question you got to ask yourself is, what do you do when you get in a state of fear? If I asked you what really stops you from achieving all that you want, you and I would have to be honest and say fear. And there's so many fears people have. Fear of rejection, fear of failure, fear of this, fear of that. But I can tell you, in 25 years of working with people from 80 nations, from the most successful people in the world to the most challenging, there's really only two core fears that all the fears will melt down to. Because if someone says, well, this is what I fear, I say, well, why? What do you fear about that? And eventually comes down to these two primary fears that all human beings have. We all fear at some time that we're not enough. And the thing that we worry about most is, the second fear is, if we're not enough, we're afraid we won't be loved. And everybody has those fears. So how do we deal with it? Well, we deal with it by developing what I call breaker switches. What a breaker switch is a way to protect your psyche from ever getting to the point that you feel that you'd be not enough. I mean, to be worthless is to be emotionally dead. To have no love is to feel like there's no reason to go on. So we have a protection system that we all build, and it comes in the form of stories, or what I call breaker switches. Let me clarify what I mean. I remember one time my wife Sage and I were here in Fiji, and there was a giant lightning storm. And the storm was very intense. I've never, in 15 years of living here, ever seen anything like it. And I usually live here 2 months out of the year. And this lightning storm was so intense that literally a bolt of lightning came down and smacked the ground about 10 feet in front of Sage, maybe 15 feet in front of her. And she was maybe 10 or 15 feet in front of me running ahead. And it was kind of an actually bizarre experience. It was so intense, you could feel the electricity in the air. And Sage, who was ahead of me, when she turned around, it obviously didn't hit her, but her hair was standing straight out on an end. It looked like something out of a cartoon or a movie. And she was obviously okay. The lightning bolt didn't hit any of the wires. It didn't hit any electrical pole. It just hit a tree. But the force of that electrical energy was so strong that it literally wiped out all the electricity in the resort. Boom, just like that. It was unbelievable. Now, the good fortune is that throughout our resort, we have these electrical switches, breaker switches, and all of our electrical devices, just like you probably do in your home. And those devices basically caused it so that when the electrical force came in, it was more than the system could handle, so it shut everything down so it wouldn't get destroyed, it wouldn't get hurt. We had one brand new building, and that building didn't have breaker switches on it, and it fried all the computers, it destroyed all the electrical devices, and literally, they were gone. It was starting over. Well, the reason I give you that metaphor is we have our own breaker switches. Our breaker switches are these. We come up with reasons why we're unable to follow through, unable to make a change. And usually those reasons are big challenges. They're not little ones, because if they're the little ones, then our brain would say, well, then you should just solve it. Or someone else would say, that's no big deal. Why don't you just turn it around? So most of us get addicted to having a problem. Because think about this. Those six needs we talked about, one of them is significance. Another one we have is a feeling of certainty, right? We all need a certainty that we can be comfortable, that we can count on things being a certain way. It's part of the human need. We all have a need for uncertainty, for variety. We have a need for significance. We have a need for love and connection. And most of us are taking care of everybody else, but we don't take care of ourselves. The only time we take care of ourselves, we've got a big enough problem. We take time to connect with ourselves and feel for ourselves and care for ourselves. And of course, we have the two primary needs, which is we must grow. Because if we don't grow, we die inside, and we must contribute. Everybody finds a way to meet these first four needs. They're a necessity to life. The final two are our spiritual needs. They determine whether we're fulfilled. If we don't grow and if we don't contribute beyond ourselves, if our life is just about ourselves, we're not going to feel fulfilled long term. We're going to feel all right. It's okay. Now, think about this. And I know I'm jamming this all in quickly to try and bring you to the core that I want to talk to you about here. But think about it this way. Whenever you find something that meets three or more of your six human needs, you become addicted to that behavior or that belief or that thought process. So when you have a big enough problem, a huge problem, you got a significant challenge, and you haven't had to take any risks, you didn't have to risk trying something and maybe failing, which would make you feel insignificant and bring up the fear of being unloved, the two deepest fears in our lives. So you put a breaker switch there and you have a big problem. It's a significant problem. Plus, when it's a real big problem, what do? We connect with ourselves. Go, oh my God, I got this challenge. And you take time for yourself or for your feelings. You note them. It's a huge, huge need that we all have that most of us don't give ourselves in today's world because we're helping everybody else. Also, we have certainty that it's a big problem. We know it's a challenge. We can count on the problem. It's there every day. Guess what? You met three of your needs. You're already addicted. And dealing with that problem every day might give you a sense of growth, you know, the challenge of it. You might have enough ways to think about that problem and talk to people about it that you have variety. Now you're really addicted to this problem. So what we want to do in this session is we want to, first of all, acknowledge that sometimes we actually get addicted to our problems. In fact, the question I might ask you is, are you addicted to making things difficult? At least at times. Most achievers are addicted to making things difficult because that's the only way you value it. I mean, I'm sure you never do this, but do you know anybody else who does? Now, I'll give you an example. Why on earth did we go to the moon? We spent billions of dollars. We spent a decade of our lives. We committed. We have such pride that we made it to the moon. What did we get when we got there? Rocks. That's it, rocks. And we knew that's what was there when we went. But we were first. We were significant. We achieved it. We were the ones. I don't know what huge breakthroughs have come out of that. I know I'm oversimplifying. I'm sure there are other great benefits. Great benefits come from any great endeavor. It's the same thing that makes somebody want to climb Mount Everest. Which of those six human needs? The need to feel significant, to feel unique, to feel special. But here's the weird thing. What do you get when you achieve it? What's at the top of Mount Everest? Nothing. Some ice. Not very much oxygen. And people die to try to get to that place just so they could say they're the one. Most of us create a story of difficulty to feel fulfilled. So what we want to do is break out of that addiction. And the way we break out of the addiction is learning to stop the storytelling. And not just learning, but mastering this level of our life, the storytelling of our life. And I should just take 1 second and talk to you about mastery. I am passionate about this because most people in life are dabbling. And, you know, they'll say, well, I already understand this. Tony, this is not a big deal. You explained the six needs before. And this, yeah, makes a lot of sense. And, yeah, sometimes I'm addicted to my problems. And I understand that. Well, you may understand that intellectually. But if you're not doing anything about it, then you don't know it. Don't tell me you know it if you're not changing it. See, think of it this way. There are three levels of mastery. The first level of mastery is intellectual understanding. When you have intellectual understanding, you have intellectual mastery, you can mouth it, you can explain it, you understand it, maybe you know the phrases, maybe you can repeat them back like a parrot, right? Tell everybody else about them. But that doesn't mean your life is really where you want it to be. You know, we make it so that, you know, yeah, I understand all that stuff, but, and then we got a story about why we haven't mastered our lives, why we haven't followed through on the things that we supposedly know, why it is that even though it's not that complex to be healthy and fit, and there's a place about every four blocks to do it, and there's 20,000 books on how to be healthy, we don't seem to be able to get ourselves to that level of fundamental fitness and energy that gives us joy. See, if you're going to have mastery, you have to go to the second level of mastery, which is emotional understanding. See, when you have emotional mastery, it's not just in your head. There is a sense of consequence to what's going on here. You start to go, man, my not falling on this is going to give me a heart attack like my father. I cannot do this to my children. And you get emotionally associated. And what that does is it produces a drive inside of you to do something about it. And now you really want to follow through. Now, the challenge when you have that emotional mastery is now you have a desire to do it, but you know what? It doesn't usually last because the emotion doesn't last forever because it's not yet to the final level in your body. In the emotional level, what happens is something else distracts you. You do it for a while, and then life has so many demands and you forget about it. You know, you may, for example, if you've learned some relationship mastery tools, you know, one of the tools we teach people in that area is the power of polarity. Polarity is the concept of where does energy come from in a relationship? Well, on Earth, energy comes from the fact that there's opposite poles. There's a positive and negative pole, and that's where electricity comes from. Well, you can have a relationship where somebody's your buddy, or you can have a relationship where there is a passion that is always there. It's driving you. It's creating this incredible connection. They're not only your best friend, they're your lover. And when people understand how to create polarity, it totally changes relationships because you don't have to sit around and hope that your relationship will have passion. You literally know how to keep it alive and how to trigger and how to grow it. Now, once you understand this distinction, you know what to do and what not to do. But whether you're going to follow through or not is, are you emotionally associated to what this is costing you? Or are you just going, well, yeah, well, you know, we're good friends. We've been married 25 years and we're good apartment mates. I got to tell you, I got people in seminars. I had one couple recently at a date with destiny that were so adorable. They're in their early 80s. They've been married 60 years. And I said, how's the relationship? And they're both so juiced about each other, right? And they were hugging each other and kissing each other all the time. And I said, what is the secret to your relationship? And they said, great sex. And everybody in the room was wanting to hear their secret. And as you listen to them, it was this concept of polarity. And everybody in the seminar got, this wasn't intellectual. This is real. This is emotional. So that's the next step. You got to get emotional. But you got to finally get it to the third level of mastery. And that is, by the way, why I do actual physical seminars. I put people in environments so that you can get enough repetition of this where you live it, breathe it, smell it, taste it. You know, 5 days of Date with Destiny or 6 days here at Namali and Fiji where you're doing life mastery where you live, breathe, eat, and you do these things day after day after day. And the repetition of doing them with enough emotion gets it to the third level of mastery. And what is that? Physical mastery, where it's in your body, where you don't have to think about it. You just do it automatically. You follow me on this? Literally, where, you know, if somebody says to you that old phrase and you're from America and it says, you know, plop, plop, fizz, fizz, people go, oh, what a relief it is. You know, how do you spell relief? They go R-O-L-A-I-D-S. Now that is an anchor in your body. You don't have to intellectually understand it. You don't have to believe it. You may even know it's not true, but you still do it. Your body still responds. It's like once you have an identity that this is who you are, you can work all day long on trying to get yourself to work out. But if we take it from intellectual understanding of how to do it, and we do it enough with you with enough emotional intensity, and then we repeat that process for 6 days and nights, and then you start feeling the juice of being transformed, and you do it day in and day out, by the end of life mastery in Fiji here, you're wired. You're a different person. You feel the emotion, and guess what? You're addicted. It literally becomes your identity. You go, I'm an athlete. And I never thought that my entire life, but I'm athletic, I'm strong, I'm vibrant, it's who I am. Now no one has to sell you on doing it. You don't have to spout a bunch of what you understand intellectually. You don't once in a while feel the desire to do it because the emotion arises. It's you. That's the level of mastery you want to get to. So I don't have the opportunity to see everybody in person. This is my next best approach. If you will listen to these tapes often enough, you'll not only get the intellectual understanding, but the repetition of it, hopefully, will give you some emotion. If you do the exercises I'm going to give you, they're very simple on this tape, and sometimes you don't want to do them because you're driving in your car, and, oh, I can't sit and do that. I'll do that later. If you'll just take a moment to do the exercises, even if you got to pull over, the doing of it will start to give you results. Doing it again and again, the repetition of those results will give you the emotion at such a level that it'll get in your body. Once it's in your body, it takes over. Okay. Have I sold you enough on what we got to do here? We got to go for mastery, not dabbling. Come see me or do this now with me. And since you're here, let's just do this. That's what we got to start with. So what are we going to talk about to transform our lives, to break this addiction to making it difficult, to break through this breaker switch of stories? Well, the way we do it is so darn simple that when I tell you about it, it'll seem like, oh, come on. But let me give it to you. Think of it this way. All throughout humanity's history, as I've said, we are darn good storytellers. That's how we engender values. That's how we've passed on a way of thinking about life throughout humanity's history is telling stories. So you're going to tell stories your whole life. The secret is to start telling empowering stories about your life instead of disempowering stories and to know how to shift the story of your life. Let me give you a little background. I have a great friend who years ago came through Date with Destiny and we became friends there. He was just a client. And we talked a bit, and he was setting his goals, and at the time, he was a martial arts instructor, and he really wanted to become a writer. He wanted to write movies in Hollywood, like a lot of people do. And I basically gave him a couple challenges and a couple of tools and techniques, and he ran with it, and he became very successful. His name is Jeff Arch. And he's done a lot of movies for television, and he's done movies for Disney, but probably his most successful movie, his number one hit, was called Sleepless in Seattle, and he wrote that a few years later after coming out of Date with Destiny. And one of the things that happened was he came back to me, he said, Tony, you know, it's interesting. As a writer, he said, what you do is there's a formula to great epics, to great stories. There's a formula to writing a story that grabs people. And he said, you basically help people change the story of their life. And he said, let me give you the formula. And he walked me through these seven elements of a great story. In other words, all stories throughout humanity that have lasted, like mythological stories, epic stories, stories that we don't forget, that last, are stories really about moving from slavery to freedom. Yeah, I don't care if it's a TV movie, a great movie, a great book. You experience a story that you remember that has an impact on you. Usually, it's about somebody who's enslaved in something. They're enslaved to fear. They're enslaved to drugs. They're enslaved to some physical outside force that's controlling them. And through the process of their own personal transformation, they go through a variety of battles with a variety of opponents. Something finally shifts inside of them. And when it shifts, at the end of the movie, at the end of the book, at the end of the story, we all know life will never be the same again for this person, that they are permanently changed. It's not a temporary thing. We sense that. And we love the movie because very often if we identify with a character, we feel a bit of the emotional reward of that as well. Well, here's what I'd like to do. Let me walk you through the seven elements of a story. And as we do, let me give you a couple of silly examples that hopefully you'll remember. I'll give you some examples of some old movies, not even great films, just movies that would trigger you to remember the same principles. And then what I'm going to give you is, what is the magical key that changes your life in an instant, that changes the story of your life? Because everybody's got a story. Some people's life, you know, is a romance. Some people's is a tragedy. Some people's is a horror. You know, some people's is a comedy. You know, you have to decide what you want your life to be about. So let me walk you through the seven elements of a story. And let's see if we can relate this again to a couple of films so it's outside of ourselves. And then we're going to relate it to our own lives in a way I think you'll find very powerful. The first element that drives a story is the desire of the main character. So let's use some simplistic examples here. I don't know if you remember, I'll pick an old movie because it's been around long enough. I just saw this on DVD the other night, so I'll use it as an example. It's an old Schwarzenegger movie, and it was called True Lies. I hope you saw it. If you did, it's about a guy. Well, let me tell you how it opens, and it'll give you a sense of why you know the driving desire of this character and how that's the storyline's beginning. It starts out in some Swiss chalet late at night. It's very dark, and out of a lake comes a frogman. And he's obviously coming upon a building that's guarded by these people with machine guns everywhere. It's obviously a very important place. And as the man sneaks past the guards, he slips off his scuba suit. And underneath, it is Arnold Schwarzenegger in a tuxedo, perfectly pressed, with no moisture. How he does this, I'm not quite sure, but it's accepted somehow in the film. And so he goes in, he sneaks into the building, he dances around with beautiful women, of course, being a gentleman at all times, and at some point he sneaks up the stairs where he steals some very important documents off a computer that's from bad guys that are going to try and destroy the world, and then he sneaks back down and he's spotted. So he grabs a woman and does a tango, which as only Arnold Schwarzenegger could, and as they're pursuing him, he dances her out onto the veranda. And then he realizes he's got to escape. He jumps off the top of the veranda, of course, lands without breaking any bones or any part of his body. He is chased by 700 men with machine guns. And, of course, Arnold does collateral damage on all of them instantaneously. And he makes it out safely, killing more people in about 120 seconds than you'll ever imagine in your lifetime. Now, a typical setup for a good Schwarzenegger film, I guess. The bottom line is, in the midst of all this, it's very obvious what this man's driving desire is. His driving desire is to do good, to save the world from bad guys. This is the driving force of what makes him go. Now, the second element of a story, and by the way, while I'm saying this, think you might start to think about your own life as well. What is the driving desire that is shaping your life right now? And I'm not going to go through all these right now, but just to plant a seed. Is your driving desire to get your children to transform and become the most incredible human beings on Earth and contribute to the planet? Is your driving desire to create peace on Earth? Is your driving desire to get rich? Is your driving desire to make it through the day? Whatever is the driving desire of your life is setting up the storyline of your life. Now, the second thing that every great story has is the main character, the main protagonist, has a problem. Rarely do they know their real problem, however. They have a problem, and they have a need. So let's talk about it in this particular example. Well, we figure out what Arnold's problem is as soon as he gets home. Because he wakes up the next morning and his wife says to him, "Hi, honey, how was the computer convention?" And of course, when she does this, Arnold looks over and says, "Oh, honey, it was so boring. You would have hated being there. I'm so glad I didn't bring you." And instantaneously, you understand Arnold's problem. Arnold has no real honest relationship at home with his wife. He doesn't have a real connection. He needs connection in his life. He has plenty of significance. He's fighting bad guys and doing all these things. But at home, he doesn't have that connection, which is one of those six human needs that we value most. In fact, it gets worse because then you see his daughter come in. And Arnold is talking to her and she's saying what she wants to do. And he's saying, no, I forbid it. I don't want you going out with that boy. And no, I won't give you money for this situation. And of course, she ignores him. And Arnold's in the bathroom shaving and he had some special camera device that was on his cigarette pack. And he glances down and he can see in the living room that she's emptying his pockets of money. And then he goes running after her half-heartedly. She jumps on the back of a motorcycle with a very boy he told her not to be with. And she drives off. And there Arnold Schwarzenegger, ultimate feast man who can conquer anyone, is defeated by a little girl named his daughter who doesn't listen to him, who doesn't respect him, who doesn't respond to him. So he doesn't have trust. He doesn't have respect. Most importantly, he doesn't have the connection, the deep loving connection that he really wants at home, and he feels impotent. He can beat bad guys, but his own daughter is a person that he can't really shape or influence. So we've got a real problem here. The problem that he has is that there are some character traits missing from this man. The missing character traits are the source of all his problems. I'm going to say that again. He has a problem. Rarely does he know his real problem. He thinks his problem is outside bad guys that he's pursuing and his desire. He thinks his problem is that his desires aren't met. But the real problem we have is there's some needs that we have in life that are not being met in some area of our life, and it's because we are missing something, some character traits, what I would call some virtuous emotions, that if they were in place, he would have that connection with his daughter. He would have that connection with his wife. There would be that. And what's missing in this case is honesty, courage, trust. He doesn't trust his own family to tell them the truth. He isn't honest with them. He doesn't have the same courage he would have with a bad guy to face bullets. He doesn't have an intimacy. And this is a significant problem for Arnold. Now, the third thing that happens is once you have a driving desire, immediately, whenever you set a goal, whenever you go after something, you immediately have some opponents that show up. Because if there was nothing opposing your desire, you just have it. And frankly, then it'd probably be boring for you. So three types of opponents show up as soon as you get excited about something you want in your life. Three types of them. And you might want to remember these because you can think about your own life in these three areas. So now again, I'll plant the seed with you. You don't have to answer this right now. But if you had a problem that wasn't related to the driving desire or goal in your life, if there's something that is a need of yours that's not being met of these six human needs, which one's not being met at the deepest level in an area that matters to you? Do you have the level of depth of love that you really want in your life every single day, that depth of connection with the people that matter to you most, with your children, really at the level you truly want and that you need, with the intimates of your life, with your best friends? Do you have that sense that your life is special and unique and that you're contributing something? Do you have that sense of growth? Is there a certainty inside of you that no matter what happens, you can find a way to make your life the way you really want it to be? Not an ego, false, positive optimism, but based on the fact that you feel the strength inside of you and the flexibility inside of you to make it happen. Is there enough variety that you're not only not bored, but you're juiced about your life? Are your needs being met? And the truth is, if you're a human, there's some that are not being met at the level you probably want. That is a problem. What's the need that's not being met? And what character traits might be missing? Is there a need for more flexibility, more courage, more trust, more love, more perseverance, more determination, right? More compassion? You know, what is it that's missing? You don't have to know it now, but I'll plant the seed with you. Because if you figure out what that is and you implement it, and I'm going to show you how to do that very easily, everything can change in an instant. And it doesn't just change for the moment, it changes forever. So if you want instant change, the changes come by embodying a new set of character traits where literally you develop an enhancement of your true values, the way you live your life. And I'll clarify this as we go along. Let's go to the third element of a story. The third element of a story is as soon as you set out a desire, a goal, opponents show up. Because if nobody was opposing your desire for your goal, you just have it. And frankly, most people would be bored. So there's three types of opponents that show up. The first type of an opponent is the external opponent. That's the obvious one. So in this movie, True Lies, the external opponent to Arnold's desire to save the world is this horrible madman from the Middle East, you know, gross generalization of the type of person who is going to bomb and destroy the earth. And so Arnold's got to deal with him. But he also has another external opponent as the storyline goes on. And that is, there comes a point when it seems to Arnold like his wife might be having an affair. How dare she be so dishonest with him? That's exactly what he's doing with her. How dare she be this way? And he's very angry because he thinks she's having an affair with a used car salesman. This little guy who's very insignificant compared to Arnold, but Arnold is very upset and he's another external opponent. The second type of opponent you have is an intimate opponent. The intimate opponent is always more difficult to deal with, and we all have had them in our lives. See, we can deal with an outside problem better than one that's real close to home. You've ever had somebody, for example, who you love, who you worship, who's close to you, a family member, a best friend, a lover, who then seemed to do something to destroy you. That seems much more difficult to deal with than the external opponent, doesn't it? So in this case, his intimate opponent, he believes, is his wife. He believes she's having an affair, she's cheating on him, she's not been honest with him, she's not told him the truth, she's not been courageous, she's not been forthright, and he's extremely upset. Then there's a final opponent, which is the internal opponent. The internal opponent is you. The conflicts within yourself, because as Arnold tries to deal with these various challenges, he develops conflicts within himself about, do I do the right thing, or I do the thing that'll make me feel good in the moment? Do I do something that'll obtain what I want, or do I do it in the right way that allows me to sustain a quality of life that really matters? And of course, people make mistakes in this area and they deal with a war inside themselves. So I think you start to see the three elements. There's a driving desire. Second element is there's a problem that a person has. They don't know what it is. They think the problem is somebody else. There's a need as part of that that needs to be fulfilled that's not being fulfilled. And there's a missing set of virtues or emotional states that would change it all if they were able to embody them. Thirdly, there are a set of opponents. An external opponent, an intimate opponent, and then the internal opponent within yourself. The fourth thing that drives a storyline in any great story is the plan that you come up with. Because, you know, you got this goal, you got this desire, you got these opponents, so you come up with a plan on how to deal with it. And there's a great old phrase that says, if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans. Because rarely does your plan work out initially. And as you go to implement that plan, you go to the fifth step of a story, which is you have a series of battles. And in this little fun film, there are a series of battles, and they're with a variety of people. There's some battles between the external opponents and the bad guys as Arnold's trying to chase them down and save the world. But also along the way, he deals with his battles with his intimate opponent. In fact, there's one stage where Arnold decides that he's going to teach his dishonest wife a lesson or two. And he's also going to teach this external used car salesman a thing or two. Now, at the time, I can't remember the exact element of the story, but I think she was trying to get a car actually for her husband and work things out as a surprise. But the bottom line is, he decides to use the U.S. government. He works for the U.S. government intelligence agency. He's going to use their helicopters, their materials, all of our resources, corner this guy and his wife when they meet in the guy's trailer park home. They're going to cut it open with saws, and they're going to extract these people and teach them a lesson. And sure enough, Arnold grabs this guy and hangs him over this dam like he's going to kill him. The guy urinates on himself and then throws him away, scared out of his mind, and feels like he's a significant dominant male. And then he goes to teach his wife a lesson by putting her in a private, locked-in room of interrogation with a double-lined window. Well, she can't see him, and he disguises his voice, and he starts talking about why she was working with this man, and he's an agent, and why she was having a relationship with him, and isn't she a married woman? And he keeps harassing her, and finally she just loses it on him and says, I don't know who you are with this disguised voice, you coward. You know, but I've never done anything. I love my husband. I don't know what you're talking about. And after a while, he begins to realize, oh my God, the real problem is me. I'm the one that's dishonest. I'm the one that's not telling the truth. I'm the one who has no courage. And at that moment, he hits the sixth level of the seven parts of a story. He has a self-revelation. That's when our life can change. When we have a level of honesty with ourselves that allows us to have the opening that makes change possible. See, that's the moment that everything can shift in your life. When you finally go, you know what? I've been BSing myself about this forever, but here is the truth. The problem is not the external world. The problem is not all these significant problems. The problem is me. It's the story I keep telling. See, whenever I talk to people, for example, and I ask them, why aren't you achieving your goal? Why have you failed to get what you want in this business or this relationship or whatever's they're after? Invariably, people tell me a story about a lack of resources. They'll tell me, well, I don't have the money, or I don't have the education, or I don't have the background, or I don't have the right contacts, I don't know enough about technology. I don't know where to start. They'll always tell me a story about a lack of resources. When the truth of the matter is, the only thing that stops human beings from getting what they want is a lack of resourcefulness. Here's what I mean by that. The revelation that changes our life is there are many external problems and challenges, but all of them are resolvable if you tap into the most powerful resource you have, human emotion. The emotions that are virtuous, the emotions that make you maximize your capability. I mean, think about it. If you're creative enough, you can find a way to get the money or to figure the way to get the time. If you have enough absolute determination, history has proven there is a solution to virtually any problem that we can come up with. If you're flexible enough, if you have enough faith, if you care enough, if you love people enough, you can find a way to connect and get the answers to just about anything or come up with the resources you need to achieve your goal. But most of us have a story about these things outside our control, so we don't get the juice of our life. We don't get the fulfillment. So in this part of a story, self-revelation is the moment when it can all change, and usually at that moment in a great story, they get the revelation, but they can't act on it. And how that works in this movie is very simple. Right at that moment, the bad guys break in and they grab Arnold and his wife. And now they're both being taken to some horrible spot and where they're both gonna die. They've got him drugged with truth serum and they're gonna kill him and they're trying to get the information out of him. And of course, who saves Arnold's life but his wife? She thinks on her feet and she manages to whip a knife to him. He then murders 25 men in about 60 seconds. And frees them, eventually solving the problem, getting the bombs, killing the bad guys, and everything seems to have worked out. But you know, it's really worked out when you get to the seventh element of the story, which is called equilibrium. And if you've ever been to one of my live seminars, you know that our goal is to take you through such immersion that you transform in your character, in your values, in your belief structures. And I don't tell you what those need to be, you find out what they are. But we get them so you have a mastery of them in your body. They change in your identity. What that means is you know from that point on in the story of your life, life will never be the same again. In equilibrium, it's like you know they'll be happy ever after. Now, how do you know that? Well, in this particular movie, what happens? We see the three in the home again. You see Arnold, you see him with his daughter and his wife at dinner, like we did earlier in the movie. And the phone rings, and the first time in the movie when it happened, Arnold lies and pretends it's his computer people talking to him. This time, his wife answers the phone. And she says, okay, we understand. We know the assignment. We'll be there. We'll be there? And all of a sudden, you see Arnold and his wife leaving. The daughter hugs Arnold and kisses him and loves him and shows clear respect and connection. And now we cut back to another Swiss chalet with bad guys. But who's there? Arnold with his wife. He's not dancing with some other woman. He's dancing with his wife. The two of them are solving the case together. And at the very end, you get the sense that sure enough, now Arnold has the courage. He has the honesty. He has the truthfulness. He has those elements that have now created the connection he wants with his wife and his children, and we know it's going to last. This is not a temporary change. It's a lasting change because Arnold has now embodied in his character some new primary emotional states, some virtuous emotions that have transformed him. Does this make sense to you? See, this is true of any story. I don't care if you go to Star Wars and you find a young man like Luke who has a driving desire to get the heck out of this lousy little planet and explore the universe. His problem is he's selfish. It's all about him. His problem is he has no sense of responsibility to something greater than himself, no sense of contribution. He's missing patience and perseverance and commitment and real courage. And what happens? He's got a series of opponents, doesn't he? You know, he comes up with opponents that are external. He's got to deal with those people like, you know, the Dark Force and the Emperor. He's got to deal with intimate opponents. Darth Vader, who we find out later is his father, for God's sakes. And then he's got to deal with his own internal conflicts of, you know, what does he do? Does he join his father, you know, or does he stay on the side of the positive, powerful, good force? He's got to deal with these issues, and he does it through three films, and God only knows how many more parts of the story there will be, but it all is that epic element. And what happens? He goes through a plan that doesn't work. He has a series of battles. He has self-revelations, and out of those, he transforms as a human being, as even Darth Vader does in one of the later parts of the series. So these are the elements of any story, and these are the elements of your own life. Now, by the way, there are some stories where the person never gets the self-revelation and they never transform. And those are the stories of warnings. I mean, think about it. Every great religious book of the world is filled with stories. Regardless of your religious beliefs, that is the way in which the virtuous emotions that religions are trying to teach individuals are passed on. Same thing is true with myths and fables. See, they tell stories, and some of the stories, for example, in the Bible are stories called examples designed to inspire you, and some are designed to be warnings that if you do this, these are the emotional consequences. And if you read them enough and are lectured in by the minister of that enough, pretty soon, hopefully, it gets in your body and you develop these character traits. Is this starting to come together now? So the question is, what do you want your life to be about? What's the story of your life going to be? Is it going to be a romance, an adventure, a horror story, a comedy, you know, a great epic? You get to decide what your life's going to be like when you can develop a level of self-honesty about what has been driving your life, your desire, and realizing your desires and your needs are two different things. And what you need to break through the battles you're dealing with anywhere in your life is to be honest that the real transformation needs to happen inside of you. There's something missing in a set of emotions that would change your life. And those are the emotions that we're going to address right now in the exercises so that you can tap into the power of virtue. What I mean by that is, in Arnold Schwarzenegger's example, the dominant emotions of his life in his intimate relationships were mistrust, a lack of courage, a lack of honesty, and this created a lack of connection. Well, when he decided to be honest, to trust, to have the courage to tell the truth, his whole life changes. And when we see that's how he's living on a regular basis, that becomes his character. That's where he lives every day of his life. And so those battles disappear with his daughter. He might have challenges, but none of them are going to be lasting. He's going to have the connection with his wife that he desires. By the way, what do I mean by virtuous emotions versus vice emotions? Well, think of it this way. The secret to life and the secret to fulfillment is finding a way to consistently meet your six human needs in a way that's sustainable. In other words, a way you can feel fulfilled all the time. Those six needs, again, are you need to feel certain that you can be comfortable. You need to have a sense of uncertainty or variety. You need to feel like your life is significant, is special, has some meaning. You need to feel like you've got connection and love in your life in the most important areas. You got to feel like you're growing, number five. And number six, you got to feel like you're contributing. That's what wins the game of life. How do most people try to meet these needs? They do it by pursuing vehicles. What I mean by that is they think, for example, if I make enough money, then I will feel significant. If I make enough money, then I'll have certainty I can be comfortable. If I make enough money, then I'll be able to do what I want and connect with people. If I make enough money, I'll have unlimited variety. You get the idea? The problem is that money is something you can influence, but you can't completely control. Even if you can get all the money on earth, your country can devalue that money. It's just pieces of paper. You don't have control of it. So as long as money is the way to meet all your needs, there is a sense of fear. I'll give you another example. I was on Larry King a couple of years ago on New Year's, and I usually go on a New Year's to kind of like start the year off right for people. And this woman called up, and she was hysterically crying. And the story of her life in that moment was that her life was over because this man she'd been in relationship with for 5 years had ended the relationship the day before. And she was absolutely hysterical and suicidal in her own verbal descriptions. Now, as I said, why? What's making the suicidal? She went, it's my whole life. My life is over. Everything, my whole life is over. Now, why was her life over in her mind in that moment? Of course, I helped her and she didn't go into that place any longer. But the reason is because her vehicle, the primary way she tries to meet all of her needs was through her relationship. If the relationship wasn't there, then she was insignificant. And that meant she was worthless. If she didn't have the relationship, she couldn't have love, which is not true. There's a million ways for her to have love. Love of herself, love of God, love of her family. But all that was gone in her mind because the only way in her mind to meet her six needs was through this vehicle. Everything was riding on this vehicle called a relationship. If she didn't have the relationship, there was no variety. If she didn't have the relationship, there was no certainty she could feel comfortable in her life. Without that relationship, there's no growth. There was nobody she could contribute to. So she felt empty and worthless. Do you follow me? Now, all of us tend to come up with some vehicles. For some people, the primary vehicle for meeting all their needs is their body. The problem with this is you can work out, do all these things, but as time goes by, something can happen. You can get an accident. You're going to age eventually. No matter how well you work out, there are going to be changes. And if a certain look is required for you to be fulfilled and significant and certain and have variety, you're going to live in fear. So here's what I want you to know. All vehicles carry with them the fear of loss. I'll say that again. All vehicles for fulfillment carry with them the fear of loss. So here's the secret. You have to divorce your vehicles and marry your virtues. What does that mean? That doesn't mean divorce your husband or divorce your wife. It means you can't make your level of fulfillment as a human being completely dependent upon making a certain amount of money. You can have that as a goal. You can go after it. You can enjoy the desire. You might even make it happen. But your base level of fulfillment as a human being can't be based on something that can be taken from you. Because relationships do end. People die. People change their values. People shift in relationships. People move away and those relationships no longer are there. And then all of a sudden you're empty. You can't leave yourself with that kind of exposure. Here is the ultimate secret of life. It's what I call power virtues. There are certain emotional states that are respected worldwide, no matter what culture you go to. Think about it. What's an emotional state that virtually every culture values? Honesty. What's another one? Love. What's another one? You take them randomly. Conviction, perseverance, courage, passion, compassion, faith. These all are emotions that are respected worldwide, and there's a reason for this. Because when you feel these emotions, you do the right thing. When you're being honest, you do the right thing. When you're feeling love, you do the right thing. When you're compassionate, you do the right thing. You don't have to think. When you're in that state of mind, these are the emotions of right action. See, when you make these emotions the dominant emotions of your life, everything in your life changes. Now, you don't have to write down 52 emotions and make them dominant. What we're going to do in a few moments is find out which emotions are dominating your life, both good and bad, both virtuous states and vice states. And then we're going to find out which ones do we need to change for everything in your life to shift. Here's the second kind of emotions. They're called vice states. Vice states are emotions that are universally unappreciated or disrespected in the world. What are some of those states? Envy, rage, dishonesty, greed, harshness, unfairness. I mean, we could go on and on and on. And in every culture in the world, these are unappreciated. These are disrespected. It doesn't matter what culture, what belief system, these are the emotions of wrong action. These are the emotions of disempowerment. Because when you get in a state of rage, you do the wrong thing, don't you? When you get in a place of envy or dishonesty, you're going to do the wrong thing. I don't care what the situation may be. Absolute terror. In a state of terror, you do the wrong things. So these are states that we have to avoid. Now, we're human beings, you and I, and we're going to go into these negative states some of the time. So here's what we're going to do now, and here's where the payoff is for all of this. I'm going to take you through a series of steps, a series of questions, and I'm going to ask you to pull over the car and actually write down the answers, not just answer them in your head. Because when you answer them in the head, you'll lose track of what's going on. I want you to get this. We're going to come up with three or four emotional states that if every day of your life you make these the priority, you make them the dominant and driving emotions of your life, everything in your life will change as much as it does for Luke Skywalker or anyone you've ever read about in history, because this is how a human being's life changes in an instant and forever. So I'm going to take you through the questions. I'd like you to write them down and stop the car to do this or pull the car over right now and give yourself a chance to do this. Here's going to be the first question. I want you to make a list, draw a line down the piece of paper, and make a list on the left side of all the positive emotional states that tend to be the dominant and driving emotions of your life. Now, this doesn't mean every emotion you feel all the time. Which emotions dominate your life that are positive, and then which emotions are vice states? What are the dominant emotional states that don't serve you that you engage in too often? So, for example, you might say, well, on the virtuous side, I have love as a dominant emotion. It's not something I feel once in a while. I feel so much love in my life every day. Or you might say, the dominant emotion of my life is, let's say, determination. I'm one of the most determined people I know, and that's a dominant one. So you make a list, 3, 4, 5 of the positives, 3, 4, 5 of the negatives. So I'd like you to do that first. I just want you to stop the tape right now and make sure you write down a list of the dominant emotions of your life, not just the ones you feel once in a while, but the ones that truly drive you most often on the both the positive side and the negative side. And if you have any difficulty come up with these, especially the negative ones, think of times when you're really under stress and where do you go? That'll tell you the list. Take a moment right now and let's do this first stage to identify. That's the first step. Identify what's been driving you emotionally, because the quality of your life is not how much money you make. It's not how many people love and respect you. It's not how many PhDs you have. It's what's your life like emotionally. You see, if you got all the money in the world, but you're frustrated all the time, and that's the dominant emotion, then your life is about frustration. Now, I know that's not the only emotion you have, but that's a big part of your life. If you have everything in the world, but you live in fear of losing it, then the dominant emotion of your life is about fear. So let's get honest with ourselves. That's where self-revelation comes about. That's where transformation comes about. Make your list now. Turn off the tape. Now, don't be impatient and keep on listening. That's one of the vice states. Turn the darn tape off right now. Do it right now. Make your list. Don't be rewarding those vice states. Turn it off. Now listen, you now know what your vice states are and you know what your virtues are. Say, ah, big deal. Well, here's the big deal. This is what's running your whole life. All your behavior is coming out of these states. See, if frustration is a predominant emotion in your life, you're not going to do the right things in a state of frustration. You're either going to overeat, or you're going to snap at somebody, or you're going to snap at yourself. And in those states, you're not going to get the results that you want in your life, as a clear example. So here's what I want you to do next. You made a list of virtue states and vice states. While I'm still on the line here with you, talking with you, circle, if you would, what are your top two virtuous states? What are your top two vice states? Just decide which ones are your top two of each. In other words, the ones that dominate most even out of this list. So now you're going to know the real core that's driving you. And then here's what I want you to write down. I want you to turn off the tape. This is your second exercise. And I want you to write down an example of where the virtuous states have really supported you. Where have you used your courage or your honesty or your faith or your perseverance or your compassion or your love in ways that have really enhanced your life? So you can think of specific situations that have made your life great. And then look at the vice list and write down, where has this emotion cost you? And be as honest as possible so you see, why must this vice change? As an example, I used to have on my list impatience. And I thought, me? Impatient? Moi? You gotta be kidding me. But I mentioned this to a few of my staff members and they began to laugh hysterically. And this was what I called minor feedback, right? And so I was like, you gotta be kidding me. Well, where has impatience hurt me? And I began to realize where it has caused me to make decisions too quickly, follow through too rapidly without all the facts, and it's cost me, or where it's cost me sometimes in relationships. So this is one of the vice states I had to change. And I'll explain how to change it. First, you gotta come up with why to change it. So you circled your top two virtues, top two vice. Your exercise again is turn off the tape, write down, how is this virtue state, one of these top two, totally enhanced your life? What's been the payoff from it? And what's been some of the worst costs of your vice states? Has it cost you a relationship because you weren't honest? Has it cost you your goals, your dreams because you got impatient or got stubborn or got frustrated or got overwhelmed or got so depressed that you didn't follow through? Get enough leverage on yourself that change becomes a must. Do that exercise now. Okay, welcome back. So as you look down at your list here and you see the consequences that your vice states have taken from your life, and you look at the virtues and what they've given you, hopefully that's reinforced to you that you want to use more of those emotions. Now, we have to go a step beyond this, obviously. I got a question for you. When you look at your virtue states and you look at your vice states, in the face of your vices, do your virtues disappear? Because for most people I've dealt with, and again, I've dealt with people from 80 nations, millions of people over the years, about 3 million that have come through my live seminars, I can tell you almost always a person has a list like, okay, they have something like love, but on their away from list, they have rage or anger or fear. And when they get in that state of anger, the love just completely disappears. So what happens is we need to change this, because otherwise your vices are more powerful than your virtues. You know, often people say, well, look at this. I have 5 virtuous states and only 2 negative vice states. Well, it's not based on numbers. It's based on the power of the intensity of that emotion. Do you follow me on this? So here's what we've got to do. This is the final step. I will point out to you something before I tell you the final step. The reason we keep our vices is because they meet some of our needs. I'll give you an example. My impatience, I thought, well, I really got to change this. But on the other hand, in the back of my head, I was thinking, but my impatience has made me successful. By being impatient, I've got this drive that makes me come up with the answers. And that helps me make a difference in the world. Those are the belief systems I've had. So maybe before we make a final change, I'm going to give you one more assignment. Assignment 3 of the 4 assignments. I want you to be honest with yourself and answer this question. Which of your 6 needs were you meeting by keeping this vice state? So for example, by being impatient, I felt like I was really a significant person. I wasn't settling for the normal life. By being impatient, I had certainty I would follow through because I wouldn't settle. I feel this pressure inside from the impatience. By being impatient, I felt the sense of, you know, there's always something new I'm going to figure out, variety. By being impatient, I felt like I'm always going to have to grow. You know, by being impatient, I have these tools to contribute. Now, none of that is true, but I believed it. So as long as I believed it, I'll continue to be impatient because I'll say, yeah, well, it's kind of a vice, but really, hey, it does all these good things. That's why we hang on to our problems. By being angry, for example, you feel significant. By being angry, you feel certain when you're angry and you feel like people are responding to you, so you got a connection. Remember, anytime something you're doing, even a bad behavior, in your subconscious or conscious mind meets at least three of your six needs, it becomes an addiction. So what needs have you been trying to meet by your vice state? And then what I want you to write down is what beliefs have you had to allow yourself to rationalize that? Like, well, you know, it's not that bad. I mean, after all, I'm so great in these other areas. Everybody has a vice. How have you rationalized things and why must it change again? Why don't you do that as your third exercise? What needs have this vice state been trying to meet? How have you rationalized keeping these vices? And why must this change now? Because reasons come first, answers come second. Why do you got to get rid of this in your life? What will it cost you if you don't? Go for your third exercise. Do it now. Okay, now if you did this, you've gone through the process of self-revelation without too much of a battle. The only battle might be within yourself to tell yourself the truth. Now you got a chance now to transform your life if we put in this place some new emotions. Here's what we got to do. We've got to come up with what I call power virtues. Power virtues are what are two, three, or four positive emotional states that if they became the habitual states of your life, if they became the dominant emotions of your life, like every day you put yourself in these states of mind deliberately, like something came up and you put yourself in that state, very much like I teach people in a seminar. We get people, for example, in front of a fire for a fire walk, and their brain's like, oh my God, I can't do this. And we say, okay, we're going to put you in a state of absolute determination right now. And we physically have them go in that state of mind, not just intellectually. We change our bodies, as you probably learned, and Get the Edge. We make a change in what we focus on. We make a change in our language patterns. We're in that state of total determination. And guess what? Boom. People step straight across. Or you put them in a state of faith and wham. In that state of certainty, there's no hesitancy. They storm across the fire. And when they get on the other side, their brain goes, my God, if I can get myself to do this, what else can I get myself to do that seemed to be so difficult or impossible? What makes the change possible is the right emotion. An emotion that's so powerful that it overcomes the fear or the frustration or the limitation. Do you follow? So here's the question. What emotional states, if they were the dominant states of your life, would transform your entire life? Would give you what it is you really need in your life? And maybe even what you want as well, your desires as well. So for example, my top four power virtues that wipe out those vice states are the following. Determination. See, I knew I don't need to be impatient. I just need to be passionate. You know, I can get the same kind of drive from a positive emotion I used to get from a negative emotion. But in my life, the things that have gotten me through the toughest times, the times of the deepest frustration or hurt or sadness or fear, have been these four. Number one, determination. When I am totally determined, which is who I am as a man, there is nothing my brain cannot figure a way to do. Remember I talked to you earlier about this? People saying, well, I can't get the money. I can't get the time. I don't have the education. I don't have the background. I don't know the right people. I don't have the context. I don't understand technology. None of that matters. If you are totally determined, there is a way. And when you tap into that human emotion of total resourcefulness, you will find resources within yourself, within your community, within the people around you to solve the challenge. This is how life has changed. Life has changed. The people that we read about and that we know and who live the life that's so extraordinary, whether it be a Tiger Woods or an Oprah Winfrey or a person who transforms society like a Nelson Mandela or a Mother Teresa, these people have one thing in common, and it isn't a lack of problems. And it isn't a story that's horrible. I mean, if you know Oprah's story, I mean, most people, if you don't know her story, if I said to somebody, listen, what if I told you a child was born to a 13-year-old mother, the father didn't stick around, she was raised by the grandmother, she was sexually abused by a series of people before she was 13, she became pregnant herself by 13, just like her mom, and then the baby was stillborn. You can imagine what that would do to an adult, much less a young child. And then at 14, this kid was so out of control, they were being put in juvenile hall. What would be the future for a child like that with that story? And you'd say, there is no future for that child. And if I also said that child was African-American in a society that at that stage certainly judged by color, you'd say, there's no possibility for this child. This child is scarred for life. And yet that's Oprah Winfrey. Because Oprah doesn't live her story. Oprah lives her power virtues. Oprah is creative. Oprah is determined. Oprah manages to find inside herself a level of certainty that most people aren't able to find during the toughest times. Oprah is courageous. See, Tiger Woods plays the way he plays because there's nobody who's got more commitment than this man. He has revolutionized golf because he has a commitment to practice, to perfect his game, determination, a level of focus most people never dream about. You got all these golfers going out and lifting weights now because that's what he does to make himself stronger. See, when you look at the people you think are so lucky, what you're going to find is that their behavior is extraordinary because they live in certain emotional states predominantly. I'm sure Oprah gets sad or depressed or feels overwhelmed. She's human. But that's not the dominant emotion of her life, or she couldn't be who she is today. Does that make sense? She has certain power virtues. What are they specifically for her and her language? I don't know. But we can look at her behavior and see that she lives in them most of the time. I mean, how does Mother Teresa, a woman who literally had no money, no background, no education to be a leader of the world, becomes someone who changes society and touches human beings everywhere she goes to the point that the day she dies, there are leaders from 100 nations and more than 300,000 people that line across the streets to honor this woman's life. I mean, think about it. Nelson Mandela, anyone who's made a change went into a virtuous state and they put themselves in virtuous states more often than vice states so they maximize their human potential. This is the ultimate secret to life. It's so powerful because it's so simple and you have the ability to do it right now. So the first step was to identify where you've been living. The second step was to figure out what's been the price of where you've been living and the benefits of the strong side. The third step is to see what have you been getting for your vice states and why must it change? Here's the fourth and final step. What do you need? What do you need to change your whole life now? What emotions, if they were the dominant emotions of your life, driving everything every day, would change your whole life, would make you step into the uncertainty and do what's necessary, would give you the courage to follow through. So mine are determination, courage, because without that, I couldn't see the truth. I wouldn't be able to deal with the things that could create change. Faith, absolute faith gives you certainty, gives you the certainty to do things when nothing seems to be going your way, to trust that still will somehow, that somehow this will all serve a greater good. And finally, compassion, because that determination and courage creates all this drive, this faith adds to it. The compassion allows me to deal with when I screw up or when I don't follow through or when somebody else screws up, because otherwise you run people over. Now, my four aren't necessarily the right ones for you, but let me tell you before you write your four down what they're going to do for you. Think of it this way. If you found the right emotional state and made it dominant, made it the dominant emotion in your life, you'd approach the man or woman you're interested in and express your real feelings. If you had that dominant emotion, you would go out and start that business you want to start or ask for that raise or come up with that new plan. If you came up with the right set of emotional patterns, you could break through and really impact your child at the level that you want to. If you came up with the right emotional patterns, you sure as heck could get yourself to work out every day. Because if determination was it, it's easy when you're determined to work out. It's very hard when you're in a state of feeling overwhelmed or depressed or frustrated or weak. So if you find the right emotions, you can get anything you want in your life. Right now, what are four power emotions that would wipe out your vice states and change your life? Turn off the tape, come up with your top four right now. Okay, so now here's what you've got. You've got four emotional states that if you live in these states, you know the vice states disappear. If you live in these states, you know you'll do the right thing. If you do the right thing, you get the right result, and life will never be the same again. But let me tell you something even greater. If the game of life is about meeting these six needs, and again, I've tried to jam them and understanding of them at a very cursory level in this tape. If you don't understand them and want to understand the depth of it so you're sold that this is really true and you can see it's true in your life, I'd go back to Personal Power 2 or Personal Power Classic and listen to that tape. But here's the real payoff. Remember I said most people in life live with either a conscious or unconscious level of fear? The reason is because they know to be fulfilled, they got to achieve these certain goals. Their body has to be a certain way. They have to make a certain amount of money. Their kids have to be a certain way. They have to be a certain level of spiritual quality in their life. They have to have, you know, everything together a certain way. And if that doesn't work, they freak out. That's because all vehicles carry with them the fear of loss. You want to divorce your vehicles and marry your virtues. What does that mean? That means each day, just like you would have a ritual of prayer or a ritual of working out or a ritual of putting on your makeup or doing your hair. You want to have a ritual of deliberately putting yourself in these four states. Like if your state was to be determined, you put yourself that state. You think about your day. You think about your goals. And you say, okay, if I was totally determined, how would I breathe? How would I move? How would I feel? What would I say? What would my voice be like? And you deliberately go in that state physically. Remember I said about mastery? It's not understanding it intellectually. It's emotionally feeling it and then emotionally feeling it enough in your body till you start to do it automatically. Just like advertisers condition us to instantly respond, if every day you have a ritual of going into these four states, pretty soon it'll be natural to do it automatically. It'll be like waking up and you'll go into that state. Now in seminars, I actually do process with people with music and elements where we condition you literally for an hour until this just becomes it. You can do this faster if you do it with more emotional intensity, if you do it more often. But just doing this a couple times a day or even once in the morning will get you to start thinking, feeling, experiencing this. And as you go in a certain state of mind, the more often you go there, the easier it is to go there. See, if you get angry all the time, it's easy to get angry, isn't it? If you get frustrated all the time, little things start to make you frustrated. If you get determined all the time, it gets easy to be determined. It's like building a muscle. How do you build the muscle? You make a demand. You work it, and you work beyond your comfort zone, and you do enough repetition till pretty soon that muscle's in your body. You don't have to think about it. The muscle's there when you need it. Emotional muscles are the biggest payoff. And here's what I want you to get. If you get rid of this need, if you still have goals to make money or goals to change the world or goals to have a great relationship, that's wonderful. But you're no longer dependent upon them for your emotional well-being and the quality of your life. Because think about this. If an example of my emotion, let's say, of courage, when you're courageous, do you feel certain? The answer is yes. You fulfill that need completely. And you can be courageous any moment by choice. You can put yourself in that state of mind and feel it right here and right now. If you're courageous, will you step into the uncertainty and enjoy it? The answer is yes. When you feel courageous, does your life feel like you're willing to do something significant? The answer is yes. When you're totally courageous, do you feel like connecting with yourself and other people? The answer is of course. When you're courageous, you do things that make you grow. And when you're courageous, you will absolutely contribute to other people. You can take on one like faith. When you have a sense of absolute faith, could you just put yourself in that state of mind? There's no evidence. Faith is not based on evidence. You just decide to totally trust. When you do that, you feel certain. When you have absolute faith, you're willing to step in uncertainty and enjoy it because there's no worries. When you have total faith, you feel like life is about something more. It's more significant. When you have absolute faith, you were able to connect not only with yourself and other people, but maybe even a higher power if you believe in that. When you have faith, you're constantly doing things that make you grow. When you have faith, you can contribute something meaningful to other people. The same is true with love. The same is true with any powerful virtue. So if you want to be fulfilled, here's the secret. Change the story of your life. How do you do that? Identify what's been your driving desire. Identify what's been the real problem. It's not the outside world. It's not all the things we say. It's that we have been missing some of our needs, and we've been missing some of our needs because we've been trying to meet them by things we can't control. We can influence money. We can influence our bodies. We can influence kinds of things. But the thing we can control at any moment is how we feel. And again, if you want more details on that, go back to the fundamentals of how to change your physiology and your focus from the original tape set. It'll show you instantly how to do that. Or come be with me in a seminar and we'll get you to experience it in your body in a way you'll never forget. But you can do it today and every day. You want to get to that level of mastery where it is automatic. So once you know what the power virtues are, now all you got to do is make a habit each day of going into that state and enjoying the power it brings you. If you'll do this, you'll have a magic most people don't have, and it's so simple. All you got to do is take these four emotions, write them down, put them in front of you, put them in your time management system so it's the first thing you see each day. Put it literally up on your mirror. Put it in your car so you're seeing these four emotions, and when a problem shows up, a challenge shows up, put yourself in those four states, and you will figure out the solution because these are the emotions of power. These are the emotions of virtue. Virtues are the power to transform life, to transform the story of your life. They're in your hands now. Oh, and before I go, make sure you take the time to review our book summary this month. It's with Stephen Hawking. This man is an absolute genius in our time, another Einstein for our time. He wrote a book you may have heard about, which is our book summary this month, A Brief History of Time. The reason I put this book in this month is because this man is answering questions. Questions like, what caused the universe to come to be? Where did we come from? Where are we going? What's the origin of the universe? Where is it going? What makes a black hole? Bizarre questions you probably haven't asked before. And he's got answers because he's been asking those questions his whole life. By the way, he has Lou Gehrig's disease. He's limited to a wheelchair. He lost the ability to speak, and he can only communicate through a synthesizer. You know what? He could have sat there and said, why me, Lord? Why have you done this to me? Instead, you know what? The quality of his life has been shaped by the quality and size of his questions. And instead of just asking those in a playful way, he asked them with an expectancy of finding answers, and he searched for the answers, bringing in all the resources he could. And he wrote a book that was a New York Times bestseller for over a year, and one that you can absorb in 15 pages, the foundation of, that I think will stimulate you. Did you know, for example, there are 100,000 million galaxies in our universe? And that in each one of those galaxies, there are over 100,000 million stars like our sun? Gosh only knows how many planets there are. I mean, think about it. Think about the scope of this thing that we live in. So I want you to read this book. And I want you, as you read it, to realize you're reading the work of a master, and his mastery has come because he didn't say, why me? He didn't ask disempowering questions. He asked quality, powerful questions and kept pursuing the answers every day. He's concentrated his focus in the area of physics and how to relate it in a way that empowers human beings. He's got answers. I've dumped a lot on you in a short period of time here, but I hope you found this to be simple, and you'll not just have the mental understanding, but you'll listen to this again and again, or you'll practice it daily until it becomes the emotional habit of your life. With a dominance of virtue, life will never be the same again. God bless you, my friend, for listening and for participating with me full out. I'll look forward, hopefully someday, to meeting you personally. Until then, take one of those emotions and make it a virtue called passion and live it every day. Bye-bye.